Today we start Perek Shlishi, which Rav Volbi entitles Deya Bina Vahaskel. He begins by pointing us to our Seichel. How would you translate Seichel? Loosely, you could translate it as intellect, the mind. But what Rav Volbi presents to us to consider is the possibility that there are several, that there are multiple aspects of our seichel. And when we think about the different aspects of our seichel, we have to think about how this affects our lives and how this one small observation actually can have a very powerful impact on how we shape our day and our life. So he points out, you see here, let's start where it says the tiny aleph, skip the first two lines. But seichel, in the intellect, yeshnan, there are shtei pu'ulos ikarios, two fundamental actions, hahakara v'haharacha. Hakara, what does the word lahakir mean? It means to recognize. A person, let's say, lo aleinu, a person is unconscious. So they would say in a hospital setting, they would say they were not bahakara. They're not conscious. They're not aware. But the second aspect is what we call ha'aracha, leha'arich. This comes from a biblical phrase, which in the times of the Chumash, in the times of the Gemara, and the Beis HaMikdash, meant something specific. It meant evaluating something to donate its value to the Beis HaMikdash. That's called Ha'aracha. There's a Masechta in Shas called Arachin, Ayin Reish Chaf Yud Nun. Arachin is all about these laws of how you evaluate whether it's a person or property, and then you donate that amount to the Beis HaMikdash. That's the Masechta called Arachin. What does that have to do with our Seichel? So Rav Volbi tells us that our Seichel has both of these capacities. We have the capacity to lehakir, to recognize something, to see it for what it is. But then we also have the capacity, lehaarich, to assess its value. Two different intellectual capacities. Says Rav Volbi, here we are on line two. You see it's numbered on the left side. Haseichel makir. Im ein ta'us bahakara. If there is not an error in your apprehension of something, harehi amitis. It is true. So, if I were to ask you, what color is this sefer, the Ali Shur, what would you tell me? Okay, you might say it's black. If you brought it closer, you would say, right, blue, it's probably navy, it's actually a little bit marbled. So if a person has, God forbid they have a cataract that needs to be taken care of, so they might not know what the color is. They might not have that hakara, they might not have that recognition. But if you have good eyesight, or if you have contact lenses or glasses, you could see that it's navy, it's black, it's blue, you see what it is. That's hakara. If you have what he calls no ta'us bahakara, no error, so then you see the truth. You see the truth for what it is. Asher kol bal seichel yuchal lahaskimima. Everybody can agree to that, right? There's not going to be a huge debate. I mean, maybe this black or blue, but navy will be our compromise. But nobody's going to debate whether this is flat or round, right? We all see it. We're makir that this is flat. It's a piece of paper. It's flat. No one will debate that. What's that? Thank you. Ah, he says, however, if a person doesn't have seichel yashar, so they may see things that are flat and call them round. We know people like that in our lives who don't have seichel yashar. But he says, seichel kazeh, look at the last line of the paragraph, line number five. Seichel kazeh, this kind of seichel, intellect, yochol lahagia, it can arrive, lahakara amitis objektivis. The word objektivi is not found in Tanakh. It means amiti, it means emet, truth, that is objective. this is an objective truth that the paper is flat, right? That's not a subjective issue. That's using the kind of, the part of our seifo, which is hakara, awareness, recognition. But then he says, the haseichel, line number six, haseichel ma'arich, our seichel evaluates, it assesses. Nagia ba'atzmeinu, let's think about this, says Rav Volpe. Harbe yoser mimashan uskim b'hakaras tvarim, more than we do in our lives in terms of recognizing things, anu ma'arichim otam, we evaluate them. Umamish kol ayom anu uskim b'harachos, all day we are assessing and evaluating. Anu pokshim ben adam, we meet a person, and what do? Instantly, we're not makir otam, we don't become aware of them. What do we spend our time we doing? You would say in Yiddish, what's that?
Analyze.
You analyze them. You shots them up. You say, this person seem friendly. Do they seem unfriendly? Do they seem like the kind of person I could connect with? Like I can't connect with them? I read their body language. I listen to their intonation. What's that? That's not hakara. That's haracha. I'm evaluating. What's going to be my connection to this person? How am I going to relate to them? Similarly, Zoe Anu Tamim Eza Michael. Somebody put something on the table. We're invited out for a Shabbos meal. So what do? It's not that I'm analyzing, well, what are the ingredients of this food? It's not how large is the piece of chicken, how small the piece of chicken, how many pieces am I going to need to take? That's not usually what we do when we look at a piece of chicken that's served to us on a plate. What do we usually do? We say, well, is it fried? How many calories do you think it's going to have? No, it's more than that. Do I think I'm going to enjoy this? Am I not going to enjoy this? Does this fit my taste buds? Is this part of my palate or not? I'm assessing. I'm evaluating. So many times we look through life. He uses the word on line 12, shoklim. We are... Lishkol means to weigh. We're weighing different options. Right? We get to the light. We're driving today. And the light turns yellow. What's the main avoda when you drive and the light turns yellow? It's not lahakir. Lahakir, you see the drive, the light turns yellow. It's la'arich, it's to evaluate. Wait a second. How far am I into this move, into this intersection, into this turn? Well, I have to make a cheshbon. Am I better off trying to slow down? Well, it's slippery. If I try to stop, maybe I'm going to have a challenge getting to the, you know, to the stop point, depending on driving the van stops slowly, the whole, that's haracha. That's evaluating. What's my circumstance? What do I need to do now? Yeah. I know. Lakir, I know. The light is yellow. There's a car behind me and there's a car next to me. That's just hakara. Now, obviously, if a person, Rachmona Litzlan, doesn't have the requisite hakara, they don't have an awareness, they shouldn't be driving. You can't get to haracha if you don't have hakara, right? A person who doesn't have the ability to see out their rearview mirror is not going to be able to evaluate, right? That's pashut. But once we get past the hakara, I see where the cars are, I see that the yellow light is yellow, so now I spend my time being marich. So then Rav Volpe points out, go to the paragraph 20, he points out that these two values, hahakara vaharacha, einon toluyo zubazu, they are not, the word tole means to hang, they're not dependent on each other, right? You can imagine somebody who has very strong analytical and evaluatory skills, if there's such a word, right? But they don't have a good sense of how to apprehend reality. They don't really grasp necessarily what's in front of them. So they might be very insightful into how to evaluate, but they don't have a clear sense of what they're looking at. And then you could have somebody who has a very clear sense of what they're looking at, but they don't know how to calibrate that. So now that we have these two understandings, Rav Volpe asks a fabulous question. Where do these things come from? Well, lahakir, to become aware of something, obviously that comes from our seichel, from our understanding, from our perception. But where does our ha'aracha come from? Where does that come from? Especially because today we have a much greater awareness of the concept of ha'aracha than we ever did in our history, in the history of man. Who do we thank for that? Two Yidalach, two guys. Their names are Kahaneman and Tversky. Daniel Kahaneman and his partner, Lahavdil Bein Chaim L'Chaim, Tversky, Amos Tversky, two Israeli psychologists. What was the Gaonus of Kahaneman Tversky? By the way, if you're interested in this, there is a fascinating book. It's called The Undoing Project. It's about Kahneman and Tversky. What was their chav in the world of psychology? How did they change the world of psychology completely? And everything now is different than it was before. They identified something called heuristics, which are biases that we have. And they began to uncover how we have these innate biases that we're not even conscious of. And they did zillions of experiments across cultures and ages, and they opened the eyes, and now tons of people are following many more experiments, basically following in the same mahalach of saying, wait a second, there's a reason that people make decisions, and sometimes those reasons are overt, and sometimes they are covert. And it was a revelation that you can have something which is a scenario broken into two, where the mathematical proposition is equal on both sides, but most people are going to choose this side because they have a particular bias. And so there's this psychological bias that influences the decisions that we make, and that's why their work was revolutionary. You're talking about Nobel Prize and major, major transformation. Why? Because when you talk about biases in decision making, you're talking about high stakes, like hospitals. If you can identify biases and errors in hospitals, you can save lives. You can talk about financial trends and identify how we make economic decisions and potentially make a fortune. You're talking about how to treat people with various ailments, whether they're physical or emotional. So understanding from a provider standpoint, what people are thinking and how it is that if you apply to a college, and it might depend if the person who read your application read it in the morning or in the afternoon, read it before they had coffee or after they had coffee, how that's going to affect the world. This is like so many, so many, so many layers. It's mamish amazing, amazing. What are they dealing with? What are Kahaneman and Tversky talking about? They're talking about haracha, the koach of evaluation. That's what they're talking about. What they're pointing out is that all through life, we are making these instant assessments, value judgments, without even being aware of them. I like this person, I don't like this person, so I react in a certain way. You know, I'm not aware that I'm hangry, you know, until after the fact, right? I don't know if anybody, years ago there was this Snickers commercial. You know what I'm talking about? There's a Snickers commercial where a person used to be a mensch and then they look like a bear or something like that, right? And then they give them Snickers, Baruch Hashem, they're much better. They go back to it. But it's so true. It's totally true. But a lot of times, we don't realize that we're hangry until afterwards. Right? Until after you eat the Snickers, then you're like, no wonder I was so cranky for the last 2 hours. So this is obviously like a low basic observation. But the deeper observation is that there are internal forces at work that calibrate our values. So what are those? Where do they come from? What is the root of this koach of ha'aracha, of evaluation, of assessment? So Rav Volbe explains. Last line here on the first column, on A. Ha'akara hi pu'ula machshavas yunis, ha'aracha mehechan hinovas. Where does ha'aracha come from? If hakara comes from analytical, intellectual analysis, or not analysis, but observation. It's a scientific observation. I see it's black, it's black. But where does the ha'aracha, where does the value come from? Turn the page to the other side. Mitchunos v'negios? Does it come from a person's qualities and their biases? Which is true. Zui svara. Shitchis midai says that's too superficial. To say that our affinity for certain things and our dislike for certain things is just a function of our psychological makeup or our personal experiences, that's true, but he says that's too superficial. It can't just be that our connection, our affinity to certain things is because we had that experience growing up. That's true, but it's got to be deeper. What is it, he says, kanira, it seems, hinova'as, top line, me'etzem mahus hanefesh. It comes from the etzem, the essential mahus, identity of the soul. A person is at their core a collection of values that are expressing their inner soul, their inner self. There's something about us in our neshama, in our nefesh, which has a unique periodic table, a unique set of kochos, of netios that are part of our nefesh, that are expressed through our life. And that's part of, you could argue, that's part of derech ha'avoda. And so the things that we value oftentimes are an expression of that, of our deeper inner soul. So maybe we could talk about it. Rav Olbit doesn't take it in this direction exactly, but we could think about it in terms of things that speak to us. You know, there's a Baal Shem Tov story that the Baal Shem HaKadosh went to a town somewhere because he was seeking out, he heard in Shemayim that there was a person in this town who is Ha'olam Haba, is greater than his own, than the Baal Shem HaKadosh. So Baal Shem Tov wants to meet. Who is it whose Olam Haba is greater than his Olam Haba? So he finds out that this person is living in such and such a town, so he goes to that town. He figures he's going to have this most amazing spiritual experience. So he goes to the town, he finds out where this guy lives, he knocks on the door, and the man opens the door, and he sees the Baal Shem Tov there, but he doesn't know who he is or anything about him. So he says, "Hi, Shalom Aleichem, can I visit with you? I heard you live here. I just wanted to talk to you for a little bit, maybe spend Shabbos together, just get to know you. I heard you're somebody who's worth knowing in the neighborhood." The man says, "For sure." So Baal Shem is a little bit, you know, taken aback. The man, no disrespect him, but he was not heavy set. He wasn't obese. He was unusually obese. The man was enormous. And what was strange, the Baal Shem Tov noticed, was that not only was he so large, he seemed, every 10 seconds, he seemed to be eating all the time. He was always snacking, had his hand in a cookie, and then he had his hand over here. So the Baal Shem Tov figured, okay, maybe there's some inyan that this person has. So they talk a little bit, and the man says, "I got to go to work." So he says, "What do you do?" So he says, "I'm a wood chopper." So he goes out to the forest, he has huge arms, and starts chopping wood. After chopping down, you know, two twigs, he sits down, he has lunch. His lunch is mamish, like an enormous, enormous lunch. And then he goes back to work after about 5 minutes of chopping, says, "I have to have a snack." So he sits down, he has a snack. And after the afternoon, he had about 35,000 calories. And the Baal Shem Tov, finally at some point, he says to him, "Reb Yid, can I ask you a question? I had a feeling I would meet somebody special. I want you to explain to me, what's your life about? And I have to ask you, Reb Yid, can you tell me, why do you eat so much?" This man says, "I'll tell you exactly why." He says, "My father was a pious and devout Jew. Everything he did was for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything he did was for God. He was a simple, pious Jew. And one day, a group of anti-Semites came into our town, and they were just looking for a Jew. And my dad was walking in the street, and they took this scrawny little Jew, and they pushed him up against the wall, And they pulled out a cross and they said, Jew, you kiss this cross right now. And he said, no, I won't do that. What do you mean? I have a God. I've never kissed your cross. Are you crazy? And he said, if you don't do that, we're going to take you to the backyard. We're going to tie you to a stick and we're going to burn you alive. And unfortunately, as you know, in Europe, this wasn't the first time or the last time that things like this happened. So the guy says, no problem. Do it. I will never, ever kiss your cross. And they said, fine. So they got a mob together. They took him to the back. They put him on a stick. And they burned him to the death. So the man says to the Baal Shem Tov, he said, my father was so scrawny, he hardly ate a thing. He burnt in 5 seconds. He says, you know what I decided at that moment? He says, I'm going to eat for the rest of my life so that when they take me and put me on a stick, they're going to wish they hadn't, because it's going to take me 3 hours to burn. The Baal Shem Tov looked up and he says, God, now I understand. Because this man, his whole life is thinking, I'm going to die one day, Al-Kiddush Hashem, so this is going to be my avoda. So why do I tell you the story? Because here you have a person that this was probably their calling. This was their, you know, obviously it's an exaggerated story in the Baal Shem Tov stories. Whether, I'm not saying this story actually ever happened. This is a Baal Shem Tov story. It's a legend. But the point of the legend is to say that a person can create a value based on what's the koach that's coming from their neshama. It must have been that this person, their neshama, they had this koach that they could draw up the calories, the nutrients that God put into the world in the service of Hashem, and whatever that was. And so for this person, their value system, his ha'aracha, was such that that put eating at the top of the value system. So when we think about how we are ma'arich, how we give value to things, we need to think about where that comes from in our neshama. Yeah.
Is that really coming from his neshama, or that's coming from a past experience?
Oh, so that's what I think. I think what he's doing is he's saying, this is my avoda. This is my mahalach, my approach in life to get closer to Hashem, is that every moment of my life is going to be eating with in mind that I'm making myself into a sacrifice to God. So you could say that comes from an experience, but where does that experience come from? The Baal Shem HaKadosh says that life is like a mirror. When you see something, it reflects something about you. When I see something, it reflects something about me. When I see somebody come late to davening, it's because there's something that's chasarin in my davening. So maybe this story is not the best way of articulating this, but what this person is trying to say is that I have an approach in my Avodas Hashem. Now, yes, it may have been precipitated by a particular incident, but that incident probably drew out what that person's potential was, what that person's approach to Avodas Hashem was. So the challenge, I think, is when we think about this idea of harach, of giving value, is how do we ensure that the values that we pursue and that the metrics that we use for being ma'arich, for evaluating the experiences that we have in life, how do we ensure that those are true to our neshama and not because of things that we picked up on the way? Unhealthy habits, strange values from other cultures or other places or foreign ideas. Because the same way that it's possible for somebody to have a seichel, an intellect, which is not yashar, that's not straight from a hakara standpoint, there are people out there who, if you ask them what shape this is, they'll say that it's round. Either because they have vision issues or because their perception is just different from reality. So the same thing, what's that? Right, maybe they just like to be contrarian, exactly. But the same way, we have to be cautious. Where does our haracha come from? Where do our values come from? It's a very important conversation to have with ourselves, yeah.
But it's always, according to this, it's always a subjective thing, right? So it's not the truth, because the truth is just the hakara.
Well, right? Or, you can have truth, which is subjective. Meaning, yeah. This is true for me. Mm-hmm. The Ribbono Shel Olam created me at this time, in this place, in this way. It wasn't, he didn't create me 100 years ago, and he didn't create me in 10 years. He created me now in this time. So for this time, in this place, my neshama has a particular purpose. So I'm going to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a certain way. Mm-hmm. That's going to be my truth, my avoda. And that's not necessarily going to be the same for somebody else who's older than I am, younger than I am, in a different stage in life or in a different place. So in a sense, it's true for me, but that same set of values is going to be different for somebody else. The same way that the set of values is going to be different at different times in my own life. The challenge, and I think this is what is so powerful about this idea, is the importance of understanding that the values are ultimately a reflection of our neshama. And so we need to make sure that our neshama is in a healthy place, that we reflect and that we express the purity of what is within and what is unique to us. Not to try to mimic somebody else, but also to make sure that the values that we are using as the barometer for making our decisions in life are truly our neshama values. Yeah.
Could the neshama be the perception of it from the neshama be clouded by our own will, for instance, in the Keter, or the goof?
So for sure, for sure. So what you're pointing out is that we're focusing in this chapter on seichel, but the seichel has to contend with the goof, 100%.
Right. Yeah.
So how do we make sure that the values of the seichel, which are what he calls seichel yashar, mm-hmm. straight, authentic seichel, is not being compromised by the goof?
Yeah.
How do we do that? I have no idea. This is our life challenge. This is what life is all about. That's why we learn. That's why we have Torah mitzvahs. That's why we have tefillah, to constantly calibrate ourselves, to check back in and say, is my set of values in line with my neshama? Is this ha'aracha, is this arachin that I'm going through life with, is this who I really am? And let's make sure of that. That's going to be our job, is to make sure that this seichel, as you're saying, is driving, right? Make sure that the driver's seat is being occupied by the seichel, not being occupied by the guf. And when it's occupied by the seichel, it should be a seichel which is true to our neshamas and not something that somehow hijacked the wheel of life. And so it's a reminder that at our core, we are beings that are marich. We spend our entire days evaluating, assessing, and to do that, we need to make sure that our value system is noveah. It's coming from our nefesh, from our soul, which is refined. Have a great day. Drive safely. Yes.
What an example of this being like to